Hello, everybody. My name's Jeremy, and I'm an alcoholic. Woo! All right. Thank you. Water. Water. Air. Water. All right. Right on, Sean. Good job. I was amazed at how still you were standing up here. How calm and everything. A lot of energy in this room, man. You were just like calm as can be. Right. Everybody needs a little help sometime. Isn't that right? I'm going to ask you guys for a little bit of help right now. Sometimes I forget to breathe. I get so excited. So will you guys breathe with me one time? Oh, it feels so good. All right, thank you, everyone. Oh, wow, now we got that out of the way. Man, I've heard a lot of good things here already this evening. Welcome to the newcomers. I know. You think you feel awkward? I'm always like this. I'm from a long line of alcoholism and drug addiction, and I think there's a little mental illness in there, maybe. I say that just to put you at ease. How am I doing? You're giving me the look. I know. Here we go. All right. Yes. May I see the newcomers raise up your hands? Let's give them a hand. It ain't easy. It ain't easy to reach out and ask for help. And you folks may not know this right now, but you're a vital part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You keep this thing alive. You keep it fresh. And you keep it interesting. Yeah, a lot of us were pretty interesting when we first got here. We all know how you feel. So, all right. Sometimes I need to compose myself, and so I'm just going to do it right here in front of you guys. God, help me to choose my words, and thank you for the courage to tell the truth. Amen. All right, I feel better already. You with me, right, Marvin? Okay, here we go. I've heard it said, the great minds discuss ideas, and that mediocre minds discuss events, and that small minds discuss other people. So I'm going to start out by talking about other people. Those are easy. Hopefully I can lead into some events, and then with a little love, maybe I can lash it together with some ideas. We'll see how it goes. All right. Yeah, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I have a message of love, and I have a message of hope. Because, see, I was beyond human help. I was hopeless when I got here. I hate it when I gack up, but it'll get better. You'll see, I'll get my stride, and we'll groove together, all right? I got 45 minutes, so shit. Hope something happens. Right. Yeah, so who do we want to talk about? I want to talk about the newcomers for a moment or two. You know, you guys should be commended. It takes a lot of courage to reach your hand out and ask for help. It ain't easy. And a lot of us, it takes a long time. And some of us have to get beat way down before we can finally make that move and ask for help. And that's the way it was for me. See, I've been at it for a long time. Whew. I like the affirmation up here in the front row. Yeah, it looks like you have been at it. And still at it, aren't you? That's all right. One time when I went to detox, the lady said, "Whoa, not you again." And I was like, "Oh, no, this time I'm here on an H&I panel." And she said, "Well, you've got the face of experience." I think it was a compliment. I don't know. All right. So anyway, let's start at the beginning. My mom drank a lot while she was pregnant with me. And so... All right. And so that explains a little bit. And, you know, it was back in the 50s, and they just didn't know better. You know, it was acceptable. It was, that's just what they did. And she just was doing the best she could. And, and she drank a lot while she nursed me. Mother's milk, yeah. What are you going to do? So when my brother came along and I got bumped off of the tit, it was like my first detox, okay? you guys are easy. I guess I wasn't real happy about that. And so my grandmother gave me laudanum. They gave me tincture of opium, you know, babysitter in a bottle, calm me right down. And the reason I say that is because drugs and booze have been in my system pretty much, you know, since the beginning. And then growing up in the 60s, of course, everything that you young people have heard about the 60s, pretty much true, yeah. And then some. It was an exciting time to be alive, and drugs were not only acceptable, they were... It seemed like to me that they were encouraged, it was fashionable. Might as well start getting intimate.
Are you gonna
My friend told me don't stand behind the podium. He said stand in front of it. It gives you a heightened sense. Okay, I've got my friends up here, and they you know, they're, oh, no. All right. Okay. All right, where was I? Back in the 60s. Oh, yeah. You know, sex, drugs, rock and roll. I mean, that's, you know, you've heard all the stories, and, you know, we've all got stories, right? And for me, it's pretty much a so what deal. I mean, I could tell you what it was like partying with Keith Richards, you know? So what deal? Of course, Keith was up on stage and I was down in the audience. But we were partying, drinking. So, you know, we all got stories. What I really like to talk about is really what happened, because that's what binds us all together. We're all cut from the same cloth. We all got to that same point where we said, "I can't do this anymore, and I don't know what to do. I want to stop, but I can't." You guys with me on that one? Yeah. And so for you newcomers, we all know what you've been through and what you're going through maybe right now. And that love that I was talking about here at Alcoholics Anonymous, it just doesn't exist out there in the real world. And I didn't know how to act when I got here, because, I mean, I liked you guys, and I liked you just fine. Like, don't come near me, you know. You know, I was not a big hugger guy. I couldn't make eye contact, and it was really hard for me to, like, even string two sentences together. How am I doing so far? Okay. All right. You can't be that bored, Marvin. Come on, man. I love to talk about the love here at Alcoholics Anonymous because, you see, ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't used to that kind of thing. And I know now today that God spoke to me through people when I was having those moments. And Lord knows I've had a few moments. And the way I look at it, yeah, don't get me excited. I have one right now. Stop. See, I believe that some of us have to get really, really beat down before we ask for help and we receive that help. And then for those of us that receive that help, recovery is just that much sweeter and it's that much brighter. You know, birds are singing, fish are jumping, women are smiling. You know, I mean, it wasn't like that towards the end. So I guess I can... we've got time for one or two stories anyway, right? Okay, all right. Okay, when I reached the end of my rope, you see, ladies and gentlemen, I'd been given a never-ending script. Oh, and Christiana, shucks, I know you're out there, but that whole may cause drowsiness thing, yeah. I just went through that just a little while ago, and it's a dangerous game, and that's kind of what happened for me. I guess I can give you a little bit of the backstory. All right. There was a time when I got a 5150, and that's cop talk for being a danger to yourself or others. I know, it seems hard to believe, right? It's true. And I got two of them, right in a row. It was a bad week or something. Anyway, they told me that I had to do 90 days in a rehab or 90 days in jail. And so it's like, okay, I can hang, you know. I'm going to go this rehab thing. And I showed up, and the lady said, you've been drinking? And it's like, well, yeah, you know. She says, well, you can't drink here. And I said, well, I'm here for drugs, you know. She said, well, yeah, I said, I got to go home and think about this for a couple of weeks. So that's what I did. But then I came to this rehab, and they took me to meetings, and it was like, it was great. The vibes were nice. People were friendly. And I liked it. You know, I liked being sober. And I got all the good things that life has to offer. I went back to school, met a girl, bought a house, all the good things. And then one day, just like it says in the book, not a cloud in the sky, I was at the, went to the dentist, and seemed like a normal day, and then on the way out of the dentist, a lady says to me, she says, sir, are you experiencing any discomfort? And I was like, come on, look at me, you know. I'm an uncomfortable guy, you know. And she had a big bowl of Vicodins, and they were like all wrapped up like little trick-or-treat candies. And it was like, you know, free samples, you know, no prescription necessary. Come and get it. And my hand just went straight in, and I didn't even think once. Didn't even, never even cross my mind. And you see, I had 6 years of being on the Natch, and it didn't even cross my mind, not even once, that I was experiencing a relapse. And, and it scratched an itch that hadn't been scratched for a long time. And next couple days, I was back at that dentist's office. Hey, it's where's that bowl? It's me, uncomfortable guy. Remember me? You know. And so that started a thing. And then next thing I knew. Went to a doctor, and he said, you ought to try OxyContin. And I was like, no, I want something good. And he goes, no, really, you should try OxyContin. It's very effective. And it was. And it got right on top of me. And the reason I tell you all this, ladies and gentlemen, is because in those 6 years, I never read the book. I never turned my will over to a power greater than myself. And by not doing that, I didn't give back anything to the program. I was a taker. I used it. I used it, and then it was, thank you very much. I'm sober now. I'm going on with my life. And so that stuff got right on top of me. I got to the point where I couldn't make a move without my medicine. And that's why my heart goes out to all the people that are strung out and they don't even know it. I'm going to give you just a little update right here in the middle of it. Did I mention I have ADD? Okay, I've got ADD and OCD. I'm drug dependent, codependent, and it's like, and I got some personal problems too. So I'm gonna, you know, stay with me here, okay? All right. A little while ago, I got a knee injury, and I was at the doctor, and I told the doctor, it's like, you know, I can't have anything pain. Like I'm an addict. I'm in recovery here, and he said, for sure, this is non-narcotic. And he gave me something, and I had that little, you know, sleepy eye on it. And you know, I was like, okay, I believe you. But, you know, next thing I know, I mean, I took a couple of them, and it's like, it was a bad scene. I'm so glad that I didn't get called on at the meeting I was at. And so I called my friends, and they said, man, that stuff is bad. It's like, you know, people go out on this, and it's horrendous. It's a synthetic. And so thank you, all my friends who were with me at the time. So that's a touchy thing. And see, I didn't see it coming, ladies and gentlemen. I did not even see it coming. Didn't think once. Okay, so anyway. All right. You want to take a little trip back with me for a moment or two? Okay. Well, when I was 20 years old, I decided it would be a good idea to take a trip to Hawaii. And smoked a couple joints, and that was in the 70s, and then it was the 80s. And it's kind of, that's the short version. Okay. Anyway, I met a girl there, and she lived on the mainland, and I lived, and I, you know, come and see me. Okay. We had a child, and I decided that it would be a good idea, seemed like the right thing to do, to move back to the mainland and be a father for this child. And what I didn't realize was that, man, drugs were rampant here. And I'd been away for 10 years, and so I wasn't privy to what was going on here in the real world. And my friends started telling me that, man, your girlfriend, she's kind of, I thought she had like a behavioral problem or something, you know, just a little, like, come home from work, it's like, hi, honey, what's for dinner? And she's like, you know, like a snake, you know, around the corner. It's like, whoa. I got to the point where I'd put my shoes, you know, my slaps near the door, you know, so I could hear them running. And because when she had that look in her eye, it was like, time to go, that's all. And, okay, long story longer. she got kind of like kidnapped and with the child and I was left everything that I thought was important to me. It was like no forwarding address, no cancel all calls. I couldn't get a hold of anyone. And so he was effectively like taken away from me, and she was just gone. Okay. I went into like one of those benders, spree, I think they call it. And I went on one, and it, you know, I didn't come up for air for a long time. And oh, shucks. As long as we're going to be intimate here, I might as well share a sparkly moment with you. one night, I thought that it would be a good idea. I just didn't want to exist any longer. And I had one of those moments where it was like, first I was holding on to the ground, trying to make everything stop. And then luckily I went inside and I lived in the mountains. Skip the details. There were no neighbors. So I was all alone. I heard myself saying, I just want to die. And I had one of those moments where I was looking at myself and saying, that's not what you really want to be. That's not you. That's not what you want to do. And I decided I was just going to crawl upstairs and say a little prayer. And I don't remember the words, but what I do remember is I started thinking I was going to have a heart attack or something. Like I was going to have, I was gone. And then I remember just letting go and saying, okay, if this is it, let's go. And I was overcome with this sense of well-being that I had never had before. It felt so good, and I knew everything was going to be all right. I felt like there was a tingling, like a charge of electricity going through me, and I went to sleep. And the next day I got to work, and I remember seeing the clouds going over the mountains. And I remember thinking, in the big picture, all of this really doesn't matter. And so I know now today that God was helping me. Of course, I kept drinking and I kept using drugs, but God saved my life in that moment because I let go of all of that trauma. But it was always in the back of my mind, like, where is she? What happened to the child? I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I did little things like I'd say, oh, I bet he would dig this skateboard or he would dig this sticker. And so like my car was covered with stickers and I remembered how to skateboard. And so, you know, I did all those things and I was in my, you know, I was in my late 30s skating around and wasn't getting any drunk driving. But, you know, I still skateboard. Okay, stay with it. Focus. As I'm skating right now. Okay, so that's a little bit of the backstory with the child and the absence of the child. Okay, God, you guys are being so good to me. You guys are all leaning forward. We're all making eye contact, and you guys are all acting like you're interested. Sean, that was a great story, man. I think I woke up in a tree one time. I don't remember. I think I was throwing up. Shit, man, we all got stories. Okay, so meanwhile, back here on Earth, that OxyContin had gotten in on top of me. And see, ladies and gentlemen, I've lived outside the law most of my life, okay? And so you kind of know what that means. And when I had this never-ending script for the Oxy, it was like I figured like I'd arrived, you know? I got a big industrial bottle, and it came to me FedEx every month, and I got it for free, you know? I manipulated my way the system, but I realized now that the joke was on me. The joke was on me, and because I couldn't make a move, that stuff ruled me. It owned me. I could not make a move without my stuff. And when it came time to finally, I wanted to stop. I couldn't, and so I called up Purdue Frederick and you know the people who were manufacturing, and I said, "You guys gotta stop sending me this stuff, okay?" They said, "Really? You want us to stop?" I said, "Yeah, yeah. Things are getting complicated over here." And she asked me, she said, "Well, do you feel like hurting yourself?" And I said, "No, not yet. Should I? Like, am I supposed to?" And because that's what I did, I didn't realize, you know, like it's going to be a lot harder than I thought. And that's when I started getting scared. And that's when I came to County Detox. and detox. You see, they turned me away. I couldn't even fill out my name. They told me that I needed professional help. And I didn't really believe them. I thought they were lying. Nobody ever said that, because I never asked. But so I went to the professional, and he told me basically the same thing. He said, son, you've been on too much for too long, and people like you just generally don't recover. See, just like you, ladies and gentlemen, I reached out and I was finally asking for help, and they said, sorry, we can't help you. He said, you're on the equivalent of 3 or 4 grams of heroin a day, and people like you just don't recover, so you might as well just stay on it. And it's going to be a minimum of 2 years before you even start to feel normal. I'm going 2 years. Come on, man. Whoa, whoa. Are you with me? Is that voices again? Just act like you know me, Marvin, okay? All right. Yeah, they said it's going to be a rough ride for you. Your detox is, he said you're going to experience some anxiety. Wait a minute, did you say a little bit of anxiety? You calling this anxiety? Did I tell you guys what it was like at the DMV? Did I tell you that one? No. Yes. That anxiety thing is like, when somebody's detoxing like that, it's like you are no fun to be around. And one day I decided it'd be a good idea to go get my driver's license. It's a bad idea. And so the DMV is bad enough, right? You know, people crowding on you and those numbers up on the wall. And it's like, you know, the walls are moving in on me. And by the time I finally got up to that guy, all he did was push out a big sign. And it said, do you have a history of mental illness or seizures? Doesn't seem like that to you too, man. I guess I'm not getting my license today, right? Okay. So, like, the reason I tell you all this is, like, you saw me coming. When I was coming, you saw me about 2 miles out, okay? See how calm I am right now? It was not always like that. That's the truth. That's the truth. Okay. You guys feeling good? Nice and relaxed? All right. Me too. Me too. Oh, I dig being able to come here and be myself. And you guys all smile and nod. Okay. So what I'm trying to express is that I was beyond human help. You see, I went to detox, I went to the doctor, and they both just said, you know, we're sorry. You know, Kaiser Foundation Hospital, they just handed me a bag of pills and said, you know, kind of keep moving. I mentioned I had ADD, right? One of the first times I spoke at a meeting, I forgot to say my name, and I started yapping away, you know, and some lady said to me, she said, hi, Jeremy. And I said, hi. And then she said, hi, Jeremy. And I said, come on, lady, can't you see I'm dying up here? So, thank you. Is it time to get to the good part yet?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Here comes the good part, ladies and gentlemen. I know now today that it was God that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then it was all you guys that brought me closer to God. Because I could see the look in your guys' eyes. I knew something was going on here. I could feel the love. And you see, I wasn't used to anyone being kind to me. And I detoxed right in my little home group. And yes, I have a home group. And yeah, you guys can come be a part of fucking a humbuckingest group on planet Earth or whatever. Because that's the way they make me feel, you know. I feel like I'm a part of rather than a part from. Because now, you see, those people surrounded me with love. And they gave me a kind word. And they gave me encouragement. Like, and I know now that God speaks to us through people. And like, one of the first days, this guy came up to me and he said, Jeremy, you're a winner. And like not feeling like any winner. And he looked into my eye and he said, you have a gift. Use it. And he walked away. And it carried me. And I said to myself, maybe he sees something in me that I don't see in myself. And it carried me through that day and I stayed sober. Of course, later I found out he said that to everybody. But you know, that's all right. That's all right. You know, it worked. and people said things to me like, "You're gonna be all right. We know how you feel. We've all been through it before ourselves. Maybe not quite as bad as you." And one night, a man spoke, and he was saying goodbye to everyone. He only had like a month left to live, and he was saying goodbye to all of his favorite people at his favorite meetings. He was kind of doing a circuit, and I don't really remember what he said, except for I do remember the way he said it. He was calm, and he was composed. And he was okay with who he was, where he had been, and where he was going. And so I felt the need to go up and speak to him after the meeting. And I tapped him on the shoulder. Probably said something really profound, like, gee whiz, mister. And he turned to me, and he didn't say anything until he looked into my eyes, and these are the very words he said to me. He said, you are a perfect, beautiful child of a loving God, and you deserve to go through this life with dignity and with grace. And then with that, he turned and he walked away, and I never saw the man again. And I know now, today, that God was speaking to me through that man. Nobody had ever said words like that to me before. You see, I felt like I was covered with dirt, the kind of dirt you can't wash off. And I know now that every one of us is a perfect, beautiful child of a loving God. And we all deserve to be happy and warm and go through life with a little dignity and grace and maybe have a few laughs along the way. Right. And I know that God uses us all from time to time. And that's why it's important for us to choose our words carefully when we're out there in the real world. And it's also important for us to listen. Because we never know when one of those angels is speaking to us. And I know that God uses us all. And he's used me in the past, because it sounds like there's another story coming, and it goes like this. One day I was walking in a mall, and sun was shining, normal day, and then bigger than shit, right out of nowhere, this guy was just freaking out. He was like, I don't know what to eat. He was waving his arms around. He's a 5150, you know. He was like, he was yelling at people and telling rushing old ladies and using bad language. And I knew that, you know, something was he's having a bad day. And I looked at him, and our eyes met, and you know, for a second I thought maybe he's going to suck me down, and then I just looked right at him, and I just said, everything is going to be all right. And ladies and gentlemen, I watched this man's body go from like stage 10 tense to being nice and relaxed. And he said, really? You think everything's going to be all right? And I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I put my arm around him, and I walked along with him, and we talked about this, that, and the other in the sunlight. And then he got real calm, and then he turned to me, and he said, you know, I've been here in San Diego for 6 weeks, and nobody's even said hi to me until now. So it turned out that all he needed was a kind word. And then we hugged each other, and we told each other that we loved each other. And I was not a big hugger guy. But I know now today that we both parted company, better people. Right. See how relaxed I am now? You guys feeling good? All right. Well, my detox was heavy, and it was hard, and it was long, and I don't like talking about it too much because it makes me a little bit anxious, but okay, on the fourth day, I thought things are getting so bad that I'm going to have to call the cops on myself. Never call the cops, right? I was ready to. I was having a panic attack, and I couldn't catch my breath. And it was like, it felt like I was drowning. Like, the harder I tried to breathe, the worse it got. And so instead of calling the cops, I called my friend in AA. He picked up the phone, and he could tell right off the bat that something was wrong. And he said, Jeremy, find a paper bag and breathe into it. And it's like, you know, I was like, come on, man. Tell me something. I need something, you know. He said, no, really, find a paper bag and breathe into it. And it's like, bag, bag, bag. I'm just not that organized. Who keeps bags, right? You know? Or go over to the bag drawer, you know, that's not me. But finally I found a Vons bag, and I said to him, what about a plastic bag? And he said very calmly to me, he said, a paper bag is better. And you see, ladies and gentlemen, I couldn't make that plastic bag cooperate. So finally I just said, fuck it, man, I'm going in. And I took that bag and sent it down over my head. And by this time my friend was freaking out, and he said, pray, man, just pray. And it was like, and I became very, very calm. I don't know if any of you have seen the sunlight through a Vons bag, but it creates this kind of like a wah-wah effect. I had a sparkly moment, okay? And I know now today that it was the hand of God, the hand of AA, and myself all came together. In that moment, we all came together. So anyway, that was my detox, the bag method. I wouldn't recommend it, but that's what worked for me. And if I would have known about the damn bag method, a lot of money in rehab and pills and doctors. doctors and all the rest of it. Yeah, the doctor said it's going to be a minimum of 2 years before you even start to feel normal. You can experience some anxiety. You might as well just go home. And that'll be $500. You want to make another appointment? I was like, come on, man. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys didn't care about how much I'd been on or how much, what, this, that, or the other. You didn't care. You said, Jeremy, we know you can stop forever. One guy said to me, he said, I've got good news and I've got bad news. The good news is you never have to feel like the way you do right now. And the bad news, take a look around. Say hello to all your new friends. That's all right. That's all right. That's all right. So I detoxed and I asked a man to take me through the steps. And ladies and gentlemen, God has a sense of timing. Of this I'm convinced. Because when I got to my eighth step and it was time to write down the people that I'd harmed and that I wanted to make things right with, I was in the backyard and I was writing that list. And she was way up on top. And his name was right up there. And I was in the midst of thinking about them, and the phone rang. And it was her. And she said, I've got somebody that wants to speak to you. And I started breathing hard. Started kind of going. It was kind of a little bit overwhelming for me. And he's telling me, take it easy, take it easy. Breathe. And then he came out and visited. And then he started communicating with me. And then he asked me what I thought that he should do. And he had an opportunity to go to Israel and study Hasidic law or the Jewish religion, the Torah, and become a rabbi. And did he think that I should maybe encourage that? And so now he's come back and he's married. And all he wants to talk about is God and good vibes. And he reminds me that we're all part of this divine thing. That we're all having sparkly moments all the time, and maybe we just don't seem to know it. And then we can look back and say, wow, that's where things changed. And so, for the newcomers, like you've been hearing, stick around. God did for me what I couldn't do, and if you guys ask Him, He'll do it for you too. All right.